It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Today is D-Day. Or what am I supposed to do? Say happy D-Day? I guess have a pensive D-Day. Or as President Trump undoubtedly refers to it, who cares day? They didn't vote for me anyway. Okay, that might be a little unfair. I assume that Donald Trump honors D-Day, the day in which I expect he believes he single-handedly saved a U.S. state from Chinese aggression. Anyway, D-Day is a fitting capstone on a week in which Donald Trump, the President of the United States, a so-called leader of the free world, went to a NATO summit with leaders of the military alliance that's more or less kept the world safe for freedom and democracy since the Cold War. And he had to leave early in a huff. Yes, it turns out the leader of the free world had to leave the meeting of the leaders of the free world because he was being mocked by all the other leaders. Yes, the President of the United States went to a NATO summit and got mocked by all the world's leaders. I know that people are going to try to spin this for disrespect and once again proving how tough Donald Trump has it. But what I think is interesting to look at in this is not only the fact that we have an obvious clown as President of the United States, but boy, it's going to be entertaining whenever Donald Trump is no longer the President of the United States to start reading the books that these foreign leaders are going to write. So we sit through the Ukraine crisis and every other crisis in this country. We keep being reminded of the fact that world leaders are not free to say what they actually think about the President of the United States because, like everybody in Donald Trump's life, basically, they need him. Anyway, welcome to Forward Nation Radio. I'm David Leventhal. Our show this week will be the latest affronts by the false equivalence crowd. But first, speaking of freedom and democracy as we were, impeachment. Yes, this week, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, reported that she has ordered her staff to draft articles of impeachment. Well, who could have seen that one coming? This was in a week in which the report came out from the investigative committee of the House of Representatives, which found, among other things, I think this kind of sums it up pretty nicely, that the President of the United States, quote, placed his own personal interests above the national interests of the United States. Placed his own personal interests above the national interests of the United States. Yes, who could have seen that one coming? Of course, this week, the GOP released its own report in response to the investigative committee's report. Their report just read, so? Anyway, also during the week leading up to these reports, constitutional law experts came to speak in public hearings on whether impeachment was warranted. This was a full day of hearings and testimony from constitutional law experts, which I'm not sure how I can really summarize briefly for this show. I will do my best. Basically, their response to whether impeachment was warranted was, duh? I guess that about pretty well sums it up. Like, I'm sorry, do you not have eyes? Have you not looked at what this man has been doing? Well, again, maybe that's being a little unfair because there was a constitutional debate, actually, in these public hearings. A debate between constitutional scholars and the one hack that Republicans were able to bribe to show up to spout bullshit. Or, as the New York Times article had it, the House of Representatives on Wednesday opened a critical new phase of the impeachment proceedings against President Trump, featuring legal scholars vigorously debating whether his conduct and the available evidence rose to the constitutional threshold necessary for his removal from office. Yes, constitutional scholars got on and debated the very weighty and difficult issue of whether the evidence supported impeachment. In the same way that scholars get together and debate climate change, or so we are told. Yes, there is basically unanimity on the subject, but every now and then, some paid shill for the Republican side goes on and says, I disagree. Maybe some pseudoscientist like Willie Soon, or perhaps some pseudo-law professor like Jonathan Turley at George Washington University School of Law. This was so brilliantly represented some time ago by John Oliver, who said, yeah, we need to have both sides debated and represented to be fair on this. So I'm going to invite 97 or 98 people, who scientists who support climate change, and two who don't, onto the stage, because that is what accurately reflects the divergence of opinion among scholars. So, yes, there was a debate between actual constitutional scholars and a paid hack that the Republicans brought on. How do I know he's a paid hack? Well, Mr. Turley, Professor Turley, called the abbreviated period of this investigation both problematic and puzzling. According to the New York Times, Mr. Turley said Congress had assembled, quote, a facially incomplete and inadequate record in order to impeach a president, close quote. The evidence has gaps, the Times went on to note, because of unsubpoenaed witnesses with material evidence, according to Mr. Turley's arguments. And it is wrong to move forward without hearing from them. Yes, that's true. We haven't heard from everybody because the defendant in this criminal case has ordered everybody with knowledge not to comply with subpoenas. Law Professor Turley believes that we should wait until all the facts are in. Let's be clear what the argument is here. Republicans are running out the clock. They are fighting all these subpoenas, they are taking it to court, and they are dragging it out. Ultimately, some of these questions will get in front of the United States Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court of complete Republican lackeys. Now, the United States Supreme Court doesn't have to completely debase itself by ruling absurdly in favor of Trump. They're just going to stall and make sure that they don't rule on anything until after the 2020 election. At which point, the Republicans will have stolen another presidential election, because that, after all, is what the impeachment is about, their efforts to steal the 2020 election. So what this constitutional scholar, Mr. Turley, apparently believes is that we need to let the Republicans steal another election, and then maybe if the courts force this evidence to come out, now the time will be ripe so that we can replace Donald Trump with a Republican president for the next 3.5 years, so that the Republicans will have successfully stolen yet another presidency. In other words, constitutional debate. Anyway, I want the main part of the show today is on the concept of false equivalence, something I like to talk about, something that is a reasoning fallacy every day in our society, given how absolutely insane the Republican Party has become. One of the most disturbing things I listened to during the week was actually a guy I cite favorably a lot on this show, Bill Maher, guy I like to listen to. I often find him entertaining and often find his opinions informed and valuable. Not in this case. In fact, he ended his show, I think it was this week, I was listening on podcasts, I think it was his latest show, it may not have been his latest show, but I found his summation offensive, for lack of a better word. In fact, it's a pretty good word. His summation, basically, was, we all need to understand that we have to live with each other, and we all need to be more respectful of each other and our fellow citizens. A very inspiring and uplifting thought from Bill Maher. And one, again, that I find rather offensive. It is offensive because of the false equivalence. Every time Bill Maher gave an example of something the Republican Party or the Republican base was doing to vilify the other side, to separate this country, to draw us apart, he had to come up with something that the left was doing as well, or just even say, Both sides are doing it. Both sides are not nice to each other. Right. There's one side that believes in science. There's another side that doesn't believe in science. There's one side that believes that we need to do something to try to protect the planet for our children and our grandchildren, not to mention the people currently living on it. There's the other side that thinks that we should lie about climate change so that we could still do whatever the hell we want and screw our children and our grandchildren. You know, the same. There's one side in this country that believes in news. There's another side of this country that believes in propaganda, in lying to people in order to get what you want. Why can't we respect each other, even though we have this disagreement about whether truth matters, about whether education matters? We have one side in this country that believes in facts, in reason, in education, in thoughtfulness. We have another side that believes that college is hurting America, that believes that facts and education are bad for America. Why can't we just learn to treat each other respectfully? We have one side in this country that believes in democracy. One side in this country that knows that the only way it maintains power is by undermining democracy. Why can't we learn to treat each other respectfully and nicely? One side believes in promoting voting rights. One side believes that maybe we should be looking at whether the Electoral College, which is anti-democratic, is still relevant. The other side says the only way we win is if we stop brown people from voting. And the Electoral College is great because it's what's allowing us to keep losing elections and keeping power. Let's look at our court system. We have one side that believes in the legal system, in courts, in competent judges who believe in the United States Constitution. There's another side that believes in filling our federal courts, including the United States Supreme Court, with political hacks. There is one side that puts in justices like Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch, right-wing ideologues. The other side nominates Merrick Garland to try to reach out to the other side, a moderate. Let's look at impeachment. We have one side that believes that the Constitution should be respected and the President of the United States should be expected to act for the interests of the United States. We have another side that demands complete fealty to its unelected leader, its evil leader, and say whatever he believes, that's what we're going to support, no matter how much undermining of the Constitution and ripping this country apart is required. One party that allows on impeachment and everything else, differences of opinion. One party, we're reminded regarding impeachment, Republicans all are against impeachment. Well, sort of. They weren't all against impeachment, for instance. There was Justin Amash, remember the representative who came out to support impeachment? But he was thrown out of the Republican Party. Because one political party believes that if you do not show unwavering support for the President of the United States, our evil leader, you can't be part of our party. It's only one party. Michelle Cottle's op-ed in the New York Times this weekend pointed out that since 2017, watchdog groups and social media accounts have tracked visits to Trump properties by at least 90 members of Congress, 250 Trump administration officials, including 24 cabinet members, and more than 110 foreign officials from around 60 countries, all to bribe the President of the United States. Because one side in this country believes in bribery, one side doesn't. Cottle goes on to say, these visitors have done their part to help shore up the Trump Organization's bottom line. As the Times noted in September, Federal Election Commission records show that, quote, since January 2017, at least $5.6 million has been spent at Trump properties by political candidates or party organizations, including by Mr. Trump's own political operation, according to an analysis by Public Citizen. By contrast, it notes, in the 4 years before Mr. Trump's bid for president, these same hotels and other venues collected a total of only $119,000 in federally regulated payments from political groups. Let me be clear on that. $119,000 in the 4 years before Mr. Trump bid for president. But since 2017 only, so less than 3 years, they spent $5.6 million in the same properties. I'll do the math for those of you listening at home. That's a 50-fold increase. 50 times the amount in spending. One political party in this country and its adherents believe in democracy and the rule of law and a lack of cronyism and corruption. The other side is all about corruptions. Why can't we learn to treat each other nicely and with respect? In fact, Bill Maher's whole show was about Trump's existential threat to America, as it has been for years, rightly so. He points out that Trump is something we haven't seen before, literally posing an existential threat to this country. He has been arguing since Trump became the president that Trump will not leave the Oval Office voluntarily. He will have to be dragged out if he leaves at all. He also managed to point out on the same show that he gave this false equivalency of we all need to treat each other with more respect and understanding. He thinks that the next Republican presidential nominee in 2024 will be Donald Trump Jr., who apparently will be planning on taking his sandbox to the White House, I assume, so he can continue to play in it while he's the president of the United States. This is one political party. The other political party has actual competent people running for president and political office around this country. Bill Maher, in fact, understands how unique the threat of Donald Trump is, that he fell into the trap that I've been talking about on the show a lot in having kind words for George W. Bush, Boy George. Yes, falsely remembering what it was like under George W. Bush. But I guess there's some truth to that. Bush at least was as corrupt, as criminal, as disgusting, as incompetent, as unsuited for office as he was, and let's not forget that. He wasn't the threat to the basic process of this country that Trump was. And again, let's be clear, George Bush only became president because he stole the 2000 election. This is the guy we're now putting on a pedestal in order to be fair to both sides and reach out. This is what it takes. He spent his whole show understanding that Fox News and its ilk, right-wing conservative media in this country, do nothing but share propaganda, spread propaganda, and lies. And yet, he still starts talking about, his main summation of his show, is this false equivalence, this both sides-ism. And it's not both sides. You know, interestingly, on this subject of false equivalency, I had an opportunity at my job at Queens College recently to meet with one of the grand poobahs of the school, a real higher-up, who in our conversations about the future of the honors program that I've been teaching for and doing a large part to run over the last bunch of years, she managed to bring up that a disgruntled student mentioned that there tends to be one-sided politics in our department, which was a really interesting point that was brought up by one disgruntled student. Except for the fact, among other things, that it's not true, actually. There is one professor who spreads facts and truth and therefore is clearly representing the liberal position in America, since reality has a well-known liberal bias, thanks to Stephen Colbert's great line. That would be me. I talk facts, I make them read the newspaper. In other words, I'm a flaming liberal. But we also have in our department another professor who spouts conservative doctrine all the time. So it's not even true that we only get one side in ballot. But worse than that, of course, is the false equivalence. The idea that someone who speaks facts and reason needs to be balanced by a clown, by someone who watches Fox News and spouts idiocy. Because that's reasoned debate in America. This is where false equivalence is taking us. And yes, it is taking us into education where we think that people who don't know shit have as much right to speak as people who do. That's where we are going as a country. That's how offensive this is and how offensive this was. But anyway, being moved by hearing from one of my superiors about this concern, I've decided that I guess I should give equal time to all sides, of course. So next week, my students will be debating Nazis versus Jews. Which side are you on? They won't actually be doing that, but I do want to point out the idea of false equivalence between shit and something that's not shit is really a big problem. Anyway, the other problem with what Marr did on his show and how it reflects, frankly, people all across this country, especially people who are supposedly on our side, is it's not even true, as in the example that I gave with my program. It's not even true that this is what happens. He talks extensively about how important it is in politics to own the other side, that that's what this is about for both sides, of course, owning the other side. Well, here's the thing. Nobody that I know of, that I've spoken to or that I've read, and that includes a pretty large sample here, nobody gives a shit about owning the conservatives. Yet, we all know that owning the libs is absolutely a huge part of Trump's support and Republican support at this point. We know that the average Trump supporter, to his or her credit, will be willing to take a huge hit personally, as long as they know they're going to fuck up the liberals just as much or even more. That's not going on the other side. In fact, everything I do on this show, everything the Democratic contenders for president are throwing out there, are ideas that will actually help Trump supporters, that will actually make their lives better. We are actually trying to help the other side, while it is really important for them, paramount to anything else, that they undermine us. So don't say it's both sides who feel this way. Take a look at the Democratic race for president of the United States. Excuse me. Take a look at the Democratic race for president of the United States. Compare any of the Democratic debates with any recent Republican debate, any Republican debate in living memory, where all the Democrats are on stage going, I want to be president of all the people. I want to bring America together. I want to move this country forward. And what do the Republicans, say? What does Donald Trump say? I don't give a shit about the 58, 59% of this country that's not going to vote for me. Fuck them. I am the president of the people who voted me into office. And this is what the Republicans say throughout our Congress. Witness impeachment, and every other way they act. They don't give a shit about representing the entirety of the country. They just give a shit about representing their base. And liberals really need to be calling this out and not falling for this garbage. Ironically, as far as the it's not true part, Bill Maher is a liberal. I think he's a liberal, at least on a lot of issues. He's a liberal. He's certainly a Democrat. He's certainly anti-Trump. And he's the one doing this on his show, calling out how both sides are unfair. But I bet he's just doing that to counteract Sean Hannity doing the same thing on Fox News. I could bet that Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson and all the rest of the bigoted pieces of shit on Fox News are saying the same thing. We need to make nice with the Democrats. We need to be fair and considerate of the other side. Aside from the fact that his false equivalence was offensive, the predicate facts are just not true. We're not acting that way on both sides. And the scary part here is, even Bill Maher doesn't believe this. He talks about this crap on his show, and frankly, I wonder what the hell his agenda was. Maybe he's hoping for a lucrative gig on Fox News. But I know that Bill Maher doesn't believe the shit that he's peddling at this point about false equivalencies. I'd like to introduce Bill Maher to Bill Maher, actually. The Bill Maher of a few years ago, I've talked about this on the show, when Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, two, I think it's fair to say, liberals, had their rally in Washington, D.C. Right after, I think the week after Glenn Beck had his rally to divide America and hate the libs, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert had their rally, which was the rally for sanity. The rally for reaching out to all, to governing for America. It wasn't a liberal rally. It wasn't against conservatives. It was a rally to restore sanity. This came again after Glenn Beck's rally to divide America, which he then had to lie about on Fox News by using doctored photos to say more people attended my rally than their rally. Yeah, this is false equivalence. I'm sure they're using doctored photos on MSNBC all the time. But Bill Maher had a great clip about that rally. In fact, I've used it in class. He has a great clip arguing against the false equivalences that were being made by Stewart and Colbert with regard to the rally, where he says, with all due respect, it's not both sides. The battle to restore sanity in this country only aims at one side because it's only one side that is insane and we should stop making believe that it's both sides. In his clip, he cites something else that I've talked about in class and something else that I've talked about in this show. He cites some of the many conservatives, lifelong Republicans, who have come out and blasted the Republican Party for becoming insane. The famous words by, among others, Norman Ornstein, at that point a lifelong conservative and Republican who wrote a book with Thomas Mann, wherein he pointed out, quote, however awkward it may be for the traditional press and nonpartisan analysts to acknowledge, one of the two major parties, the Republican Party, has become an insurgent outlier, ideologically extreme, contemptuous of the inherited social and economic policy regime, scornful of compromise, unpersuaded by conventional understanding of facts, evidence, and science, and dismissive of the legitimacy of its political opposition. When one party moves this far from the center of American politics, it is extremely difficult to enact policies responsive to the country's most pressing challenges. So wrote Norman Ornstein and Thomas Mann in 2012. Need I point out to Bill Maher, who read this and cited this clip appropriately and approvingly? This was before Donald Trump came on the scene. This was before. What you're now referring to is basically the glory days of the Republican Party. In his efforts to bend over backwards to be so fair to the other side, Bill Maher has apparently forgotten the words of Bill Maher. Anyway, speaking of reaching out and being approving of the other side and false equivalencies, I'd like to get personal here for a minute. Forward Nation Radio was created 3 years ago by Damian Hardeen, a student in my Honors Business and Liberal Arts program, who had a lot of individual talents, a lot of education, saw the election of Donald Trump and Republicans, saw the rise of fake news in this country, saw how much bullshit and propaganda got Donald Trump elected, and felt the need to have honest news sources out there that can inform and educate people. I was flattered when he came and asked me if I would be a host of a show that he was hoping to create. Shockingly, he actually followed through and did it with the help of many other committed Ballast students who worked tremendously hard and well and appropriately to create this show. Go back and take a look at some of their accomplishments, by the way, back when we had a video component and a green screen. Go look at some of our old shows on YouTube for what a tremendous job that these people did. Appropriately, the school newspaper felt that they should be, that their efforts should be remarked upon. And there was an article in the school newspaper about the creation of Forward Nation Radio and what Damian Hardeen had worked to do. Being proud of my role in this and proud of my students and what they have accomplished, and the need to do this, I have posted that article outside my office door, where it has been hanging for 3 years, basically 3 years. Well, some nice person decided they didn't like that poster out there so much, that article talking about Forward Nation Radio and honoring the contributions of Ballast students. So I came into school a couple of weeks ago and I noticed that someone had taped a sticker. This was real, or had glued a sticker, This was really cute. Anti-socialism on this newspaper article, which I'm pretty sure never even once used the word socialism in it. It's just a comment on the creation of the show. That debasement of my property, that vandalism really irked me. But the good news is I was able to peel with some effort the sticker off with minimal damage to the article underneath. Some damage, but minimal damage to my property, thanks to this nice human being who I, of course, should be very respectful of because he or she is on the other side. Well, apparently having seen that the article was still more or less intact, the person came back a week later and earlier this week actually glued a leaflet to the article, thus completely destroying my property. Completely destroying this commemoration of the work of Ballast students. Interestingly, that leaflet, of course, was also why socialism is so bad. It was put out by an organization called the American TFP, which it turns out is an ultra-extremist religious organization that had to splinter away from the Catholic Church once the Catholic Church got all liberal with the Second Vatican Council, wherein it acknowledged the existence of, like, science and reason. That was too much for the American TFP. Obviously, an organization whose teachings should really be represented on college campuses, because after all, if people who believe in fact and science and reason are able to speak on college campuses, fucking morons should be able to as well, obviously. False equivalence there. I'm being sarcastic in case you missed that. Here's the real fun part here when we work so hard to be respectful and nice of people on the other side. On this list of reasons to hate socialism, prominent was that socialism violates private property. And this leading intellectual light of the other side decided that the threat of socialism to private property was so awful and so big, so great, that they needed to destroy my private property in order to put out their message that socialism should be rejected because of its lack of respect for private property. You can't make this shit up. This thoughtful, leading intellectual light of the other side decided to deface someone's property to rail against the defacement of property. Anyway, let's talk about it. It's one of these things that it's the 10 reasons to hate socialism. Let me start with this. When someone gives you a list, especially if it's like 10 best reasons or 10 worst reasons or something like that, they're probably stupid and they're probably speaking to morons. I'm not talking now cosmopolitan about 10 ways to have better sex. Those obviously those articles are worth reading, I'm sure. But 10 ways to save America, 10 ways that socialism is bad. This is junk food for morons. Okay. People who can't see complication and like nice, neat list. So let's go over the list that the American TFP was able to provide us regarding how bad socialism is. Number one, of course, socialism equals communism. Wow. Thank you for posting that outside my office door. I, who have called myself a socialist, have always felt that I am not a communist. Bernie Sanders, who calls himself a socialist, I bet he didn't even know he was a communist too, even though he doesn't support communism. Elizabeth Warren, somebody should tell her she's a communist. She may not know that. Oh, this is a fun game to just label the other side. I guess Trump supporters are Nazis. Oh, this is a fun game. I'm sorry. There's actually a lot of truth to that, so maybe that's not a really good example to use, because it turns out, actually, that a lot of Trump supporters, including some in his administration, actually are Nazis. But, gee, how about conservatives are child molesters? How about that one? That's fun. Let's see, number two on their list, socialism violates freedom. I've talked about that before on this show. When someone says freedom to you, grab your wallet. 99 times out of 100, someone uses freedom to steal something from you. With the possible exception of liberalism, socialism, and communism, it's the most misused word in the English language. So yes, it violates freedom. The freedom for me to poison your children and make money at it, for instance. Wow, what awful people they are. Number three, socialism violates human nature. Not even sure what the fuck that's supposed to mean. But we'll get back to that very shortly, the idea of human nature. Human nature, of course, as these morons define it to be. You know what else violates human nature? Ethics. Laws. Laws violate human nature. I mean, sometimes you just really got to kill somebody. Sometimes you just really want to kill. Sometimes you just really want to have sex. And gosh damn it, the laws violate that. Yes, they violate human nature. What an awful thing. They try to get people to behave. You know who else violates human nature, by the way? Parents. Coming next week, 10 Reasons to Hate Parents. Number four was socialism violates private property. I've already talked about that one. That's comical. I had to circle that one, highlight it, put post-it notes up saying, I guess next week the person's going to come in and rip down what he'd done before because I've managed to make him or her look like a fucking moron for doing it. But anyway, socialism violates private property. Yeah, okay. What socialism violates regarding private property is your ability to steal mine. That's what it violates. It violates the wealthy's ability to steal from everybody else. Socialism, also against slavery. You know, private property. Number five, this is one of my favorites. Socialism opposes traditional marriage. Yes, here we are, and now we really understand what this is all about. Socialism opposes traditional marriage. Let's start with traditional marriage. You mean socialism doesn't believe that men should be selling their daughters? Socialism doesn't believe that the woman is the property of the man? Socialism doesn't believe that men should be able to beat their wives and screw their wives whenever they want because their wives are their property? Socialism doesn't believe that white masters should be able to tell their black slaves who they get to marry, all of which is traditional marriage. But of course, this has nothing to do with so-called traditional marriage with men selling off their children and all that other stuff. Marriage not necessarily having a wonderful and inspiring tradition in the world, I guess is my point here. But of course, when they say it opposes traditional marriage, what they're really saying is that socialism is anti-bigotry. How dare you tell me that I can't discriminate against people whose behavior I don't approve of? Oh, wait a minute. Socialism violates human nature, and yet human nature for people who are gay is to love people. I'm so confused. Boy, thinking really is problematic. I'm starting to understand why having a whitewashed brain like the person who put up this sign could really be beneficial for going through life. Number six, socialism opposes the educational rights of parents. That one's kind of fun. It's kind of a little specific for this list, but obviously it shows the fact that that the American TFP is not real happy with public schools and the idea that parents cannot destroy their children's future by sending them to extremist religious schools. I guess the American TFP believes in madrasas. I guess they're all happy with ISIS and how they choose to educate their children. Right, fucking morons? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to do that. We're supposed to be nice to the other side. Right, considerate human beings on the other side? The educational rights of parents to destroy their children's future. Yeah, that's a good one. Socialism believes in public schools, essentially. Yeah, boy, socialism, they're really bad. Socialism promotes class struggle. I like this one. This is actually true. Socialism does promote class struggle. Just like asking a rape victim to fight back promotes struggle. Because, of course, what's really going on is the American TFP likes the fact that rich people get to run the world the way they want and gets to completely brutalize everyone who's not rich. What socialism believes is those people who are being brutalized should be able to fight back a little bit. So in other words, socialists believe in struggle, where the American TFP just believes in class slaughter. That's what we should be doing. Socialism promotes atheism. Didn't see this one coming. Didn't know this was going to be on the list. God fucking help us for this one. Yeah, imagine that. Also, socialism promotes thinking for yourself. Oh my God, I'm starting to hate myself. Socialism number 9 is socialism promotes relativism. Yes, as I pointed out a few moments ago, things are just so too complicated when they can't be boiled down to a 10-word list. I hate it when things are complicated. I like things nice and easy, like Fox News, for people who can't use their brains. That's what that one's all about. Socialism promotes thinking. Yeah, that's a real problem there. And number 10, last but not least, is socialism scorns honor. Socialism scorns honor. Sure. Let's take a look at some of the socialists in this country who believe in serving their country. That's what socialism tends to mean. People like Bernie Sanders, who's actually been serving his country since he's been in elected political office, who actually believes that being an elected senator means you should be trying to help the people of this country rather than taking bribes to enrich yourself while you are running the country. Sound familiar? Look at what's happening in this government right now. Socialists adjacent, and God knows other than Bernie Sanders are very few socialists in the Democratic Party, or anyone who could even be called a socialist with a straight face. But look at what's happening in government right now. Socialists believe in enforcing the Constitution. Non-socialists, the American TFP people, believe in destroying the country to stand up for your leader. Oh, I guess that does tie to their religious beliefs, doesn't it? Socialists serve their country. Some socialists have gone on to fight for their country. Conservatives just suffer through bone spurs. Yes. For a more sophisticated and a somewhat equally pathetic hatchet job on those fighting for more fairness and equal opportunity in this country, i.e. socialists, see David Brooks's pathetic op-ed this weekend in the New York Times, where with a much more educated veneer, after all, David Brooks is a never-Trumper, with a much more educated veneer, David Brooks talks about all that's wrong with socialism. And, with all due respect, it's fucking childish. Come on, how the hell are we supposed to take these jackasses seriously? Anyway, that's it for our show this week. Thanks for joining us. We hope to see you soon.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.